Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is an award-winning podcast in partnership with Sowetan. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. For those of you who have taken the trouble to subscribe to this content and those who comment, thank you. If you have not subscribed, please do so. I will pause for a second to allow you to do it. Because you know why? Multitasking is a challenge for a lot of us. This is why our government cannot be corrupt and deliver services at the same time, right? If there's one thing that we stuff up, but royally stuff up, it has to be our understanding and appreciation of metric results. In fact, correction, we just proved that we can stuff up some more, like how everyone became an expert in football on the basis of a missed penalty at AFCON. You guys are a funny bunch. I'm telling you, you are a funny bunch. As anticipated, last week the metric results were published. It is that time of the year that I call Circus Time, where metric results are turned into a PR gimmick by both detractors and defenders. And so, to help me understand what we are missing, what is important and what matters, I thought I should invite someone who knows better than those of us whose opinion about math literacy is more dangerous than what Moroccans thought about the towels used by goalkeepers of the opposition. My guest this week is Dumisane Shabalala, head of academics at the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls called OLEC. His work in mathematics and academic leadership is best understood as a sustained conversation with learners, teachers, and systems about what it means to learn, to belong, and to flourish. He leads academic strategy, curriculum and assessment, and teacher development while resisting the reduction of learning to marks alone. For him, results are traces of deeper transformations, shifts in how learners speak mathematically, reason with confidence, and come to recognize themselves as capable participants in powerful forms of knowledge. I have no clue what I just read. It's what he sent me. Alongside this work, he has served as post-examination analyst for Umalusi, the quality police for general and further education and training. In short, unlike you and me about football, Mshengu knows what he's talking about when it comes to education. Tongala Mazuvus. Sawubona mfethu.
Sawubona mfethu, and thank you very much for inviting.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You know, to bring somebody from OLEC is slightly intimidating. You guys are overachievers, you know, like you're doing so well. Although I didn't bring you here as OLEC, I brought you as an expert, but congratulations with your results.
Thank you very much.
You keep on doing better and better every year.
Thank you very much. And we are in the trenches.
Yes.
So you don't get to realize really that you're doing well. So yeah, when we get comments from you guys that are complimenting us, we just pause and reflect and realize.
Yeah.
Just now you just read something really profound. And it is moving to realize that while we're in the trenches, we are doing groundbreaking and progressive work.
You know, I did my matric in 1988. I'm old, right? And by the way, and it was still 2 years late because of crap that we're doing in Soweto, boycotting classes and stuff like that. Yet, I look at every year when the results come out, and this hoo-ha, you know, the opposition politicians will speak down upon it, the ruling party will speak up upon it, the provinces that do well are like, we're the best, and then those that become fifth, even if the minister forgets about them, you know, they're a bit depressed, right? But here's the thing. My question is, the trajectory seems to be better and better every year, even for NSC results, and I want us to focus mostly on those. You guys are the minority, the IEB guys. Are they getting better? Is what we see what we're getting?
Yeah. Rams, I'm happy that you started in 1988. And I think that often when people compare metric results, they look at recent years.
Yeah.
They'll say the marks have dropped comparing recent years. And really, we must go back to pre-1994 to understand where education was and where we're heading. That's where you can really see proper patterns. If you study patterns and statistics, you can't just look at few data points. You must quite look at a lot of data points, which would tell you a good picture. And so I think it's important to remember where we were. In 1993, the pass rate was sitting around 37, 38%. And back in those days, it was higher grade, star grade, and we also had endorsement pass, which has now been replaced by the bachelor's pass.
Yeah.
It was sitting at a record low figure, close to 10%.
Really?
And so when you compare where we were and where we are, you understand that we've made significant progress as a country. And I think what's important to note is to look at the subject itself, mathematics, that is often a subject of debate, a contentious subject.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we must note is that there were strategic intentions post-1994 to change the narrative about mathematics. And we made some critical decisions. One of them was to disband the then higher grade and standard grade for one mathematics for all. It's important, Rems, to remember that when we, in the days of higher grade and standard grade, higher grade was mainly offered in X Model C school and mm-hmm. not a lot in township and rural schools.
I did higher grade.
Yeah. Yeah, you were one of the few schools that were an outlier. But the norm was that a number of kids in township and rural schools do standard grade. In cases where those subjects were offered, higher grade and standard grade, you'd find that they confine the kids into one classroom and they teach to standard grade level, right? Few schools will separate, perhaps your school, and teach higher grade separately from standard grade.
No names mentioned, but one of my math teachers was a standard grade. But yeah, continue. Sorry to interrupt you.
So post-1994, we made some critical decisions. One of them was to join the two higher grade standard grade into one mathematics for all. Secondly, we watered down the complexity or the demand of the subject. In what sense, you may ask? Firstly, we removed geometry, which was giving problems to a lot of students, out of the syllabus completely. It was positioned separately as an optional paper, paper 3. That's the first thing. If you look at trigonometry, your listeners will follow.
That's tricky. Yeah. Trigonometry is tricky.
some of the content there was watered down. Instead of working with six trig ratios explicitly so, we end up working with three trig ratios. There was a content area called linear programming. It was removed completely from the syllabus. So
I did matric, before you continue,
yes,
the year I got into matric, then they introduced something new called calculus.
Yes.
And it was horrible. I don't even think that our teacher knew how to teach calculus. I mean, I found it completely confusing.
But part of the problem is exactly that, Rams, is that we had a cohort of teachers, and I say this with respect, who were not qualified enough to teach the demands of higher grade.
Yeah.
And hence, we needed to pause as a country and usher years, which I call the massification years, where we watered down the level of complexity of the subject to try and boost the numbers of kids that succeed in mathematics. I think we saw...
Is that not artificial success, though?
It's not. It is strategic. Strategy is about making choices. So those are the choices that we made. And what we're experiencing now for me is tensions between the repercussion, not the repercussion per se, but tension that arises from the choices we made. Because if you make a choice, something else will suffer.
Mm.
So from 2006, in fact, from 2006 moving on, we ushered what we call the massification period, where a number of kids were passing. And we saw that through the curriculum, there was a RNCCS, the Revised National Curriculum Statement, but before then there was a curriculum statement, and now we've got the CAPS. In the CAPS, what the authorities are trying to do, they're trying to put the rigor, which was there in higher grade. And that is why we're seeing some people saying the figures of mathematics pass are going down. They're not. We should compare them to what they were in 1993, as I've stated.
Just for my benefit, and I suppose benefit of everybody with us now, you're not referring to what is on my head when you speak about CAPS.
No.
What are we talking about?
It's a curriculum assessment policy statement. It's our policy statement that govern what we teach. And I think it's important that I'm to talk about CAPS. I know you're making a joke about it, but it's important because there's a lot of misconceptions out there. In your introduction, you kind of highlighted the IEB, Independent Examination Board, which is what my school is writing. And people out there think IEB has a curriculum. They don't. They're an assessment body.
So they assess differently from NSC. That's all it is.
That's all it is, right? So we've got one curriculum in the country, which is CAPS, the curriculum.
You are kidding me.
One.
Even I always thought that, no, there's a different curriculum there.
It's one. And three, in fact, there are three different assessment bodies. People always think of DBE and IEB. There's three. There's SAKAI, the South African Comprehensive Institute, the SAKAI. Which is a third. So if you look at the past, the number of candidates that wrote the exam, there were almost a million, with 97% coming from the DBE and 2% coming from the IEB and less than 1% coming from SAKAI.
So what's the fuss? Why can't we just have one then?
Well, we are a country, a democratic country. We are open to exercise our freedom and our democracy,
yeah,
and to have autonomy in how we execute the curriculum. For me, I would have an issue if we had three different curriculum. The fact that we've got one curriculum, I think it makes sense to me, and I find
this thing about democracy. That's why we ended with a Kabelo Gwamanda as a mayor of Johannesburg. But let me not digress. So, are you saying therefore to me, there is nothing I should read much into when I look at the IEB results, and I'll stick to the two because that's the two we know most, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the NSC results. I should not like think there's quality and this is less quality.
There is that narrative out there,
yeah,
and I think we should not go in that direction, mm-hmm, because both assessment bodies and the third assessment body, Sakai, they're all governed by Umalusi, who ensures quality. And it's just that the two exams are assessed differently, but I can guarantee you that the cognitive demand of both assessments are exactly the same.
A few years ago, I wrote that when matric results come out, it's a statement on the parent, right? It's a statement that says congratulations to the parents that helped, a statement that says to the parents whose children did not do well, you are important at this moment. It's time you come in and reassure them that it's not the end of the world, you know. And the third statement is that of the country to say it is a rite of passage. It is not the end of the world.
Correct.
But I want to focus to this on the second one. Is this important? Is this a very important thing, this thing called matric? It was drummed into my head those many years ago. We had sleepless nights. I can't even remember what we were doing overnight.
Yeah.
And I still see matriculants doing the same now. Is
yeah.
this a very important measure of
yeah.
of life, of education?
Yeah. Rams, I'm going to contradict myself in giving an answer.
Yeah.
And I'll say it is important and not important. And I'm leaning towards not important.
Okay.
But we must acknowledge that our system is not yet transformed enough to accept that matric is not the only pathway. Quite frankly, some scholars, like the vice chancellor, he's questioning the value of going to university.
Mm.
I mean, you've got these MOOCs, and you know, you learn things quickly. Things that will take you 3 years to learn at university, you can quickly through AI
yeah.
teach yourself a skill that you can apply there and then. You know, so I don't think that where the country and the world is heading, unless education changes, I don't think there's value. However, we are still working within the parameters of a system that says, "Show me your matric before I can even talk to you." Once you've shown your matric, let me see the quality of that matric
yeah.
result, and I can decide if you can play in this field or that field. Until we change that narrative, how we assess, how we teach, what qualifies as education, what qualifies as being educated. I mean, you've got a number of graduates that are working with a piece of paper, but they can't do what they've been they qualified to do. You know, story for another day. So, but the point I'm making is that we are quickly moving to a world where matric certificate means absolutely nothing. But the system has not yet embraced the changes that's happening in front of us.
You see that bothers me. In fact, the next question demands that you must take water first before
okay.
I ask this question. This is very important. Because then I sit here and ask myself, if I'm a parent of a matriculant, which I am this year, right, could I keep her at home, get all the stuff that I can get digitally, world-class stuff, and get her to be competent in such a way that she will compete in the world without having to crack her head with this assessment that you guys are going to make, and then, you know, then she's not happy because she got half a distinction instead of 19 distinctions.
Yeah. I think, Rams, you must qualify that what completes a human being competence is. There's a whole research that talks about critical competencies. Mm-hmm. For another day. It's not just academic and grades alone. So while we can send kids to school to really learn and acquire good grades, I think the bigger part of what we send them to school to do is to negotiate friendship, negotiate relationships, debate conflicts, resolve conflicts. Something which, if we keep our kids in our houses, they will not be able to develop.
Do you follow football?
To some extent.
So, you know, there's a football club in the UK, in London, specifically called Tottenham Hotspur. The current leader used to say, still says that what is important is entertainment. It's not winning. And look at them. almost 100 years later, they've never won a single thing. I'm worried about that kind of argument. Yes, I hear you need other things, but if you don't pass, the truth of the matter is that you're not getting into that university. You're not getting that scholarship. You're not getting that bursary.
Yeah,
and you may be a complete person who knows how to negotiate, how to maneuver yourself around things, but hey, you didn't get your bachelor's.
Yeah.
And you're a Tottenham Hotspur.
And that's what I'm saying. The system has not yet fully embraced what's going around. So you need to find a balance, right? As I've said, there's a number of kids that have got qualifications, but their qualifications don't mean much.
Like Arsenal.
I don't want to talk about us now.
Sorry, I must get out of football.
I don't want to talk about us now, but the point is you must find balance.
Yeah.
Until the system can embrace that, we can actually look at other competencies to qualify children for an NSC, for a degree. I think kids must get the good grades that we want them to get.
And then we have a very small number of universities, right?
Correct.
We graduate hundreds of thousands of people. There are only spaces for a few of them.
Correct.
What's the solution? And nobody wants to go to your TVET colleges.
Correct. I mean, Rams, if you talk about that problem, I'm not giving you a solution. I'm just qualifying the problem that we have. Yeah. This year, we recorded the record high number of children that got a bachelor's pass, meaning that in technical terms, they qualify to go to university. Over 345,000. And we only have roughly just above 200,000 spaces in university. So we are saying 100,000 of kids are going to be sitting at home doing nothing, right? So in the 30 years that we've been in democracy, over 30 years, we've only created or built two new universities, Solplaki and University of Mpumalanga.
Yeah.
So there's a whole conversation that we need to have about higher education and training. And we need to begin to have a conversation about exploring alternate routes. Those who can afford, I think, independent higher education is an option. It will help to ease the burden on the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except, of course, independent higher education comes with a lot of scams. Now we've had a few age-old institutions that we've known for many years being closed down. I mean, I got shocked when I heard Demlin had been closed down. It's like, what? So that's also a challenge, right?
100%.
Yeah. And parents who are none the wiser take their money, take their children to these independent institutions and things go wrong.
100%. And I think the biggest challenge, Rams, is that we started the conversation, we spoke about 1988, we moved to 1994. I think we are pushing a generation of kids who, in many instances, were the first graduating their families. The minister, when she delivered a speech, she said that the number of kids that passed this year, which is a record high at 88%, a bulk of them came from Quantile 1 to Quantile 3 schools.
Yeah.
You know, so now if you're dealing with that kind of a family, right, and you expect them to navigate independent education alone, I think they are most likely going to be prone to scams, and they'll lose a lot of revenue for the family.
And what's that parent got to do? Now let's be real. Now there's that parent that we're speaking about now, whose child got the bachelor's, was not accepted to none of the 26 universities. What do they do now?
I think they must.
What's next?
Yeah, I think they must continue motivating their children not to be despondent, and they must explore other avenues, including TVET.
Yeah.
I think there's a fallacy that Rems in thinking that every child that goes to school and get a bachelor's will become an academic. In fact, we've got a huge skills gap on some of the things. So we should be pushing TVET, your plumbers, your electrician, your mechanical engineers,
boilermakers.
Yeah. I think we should be pushing that a lot because those are avenues, right? We must also have the conversation of access and success. I always talk about access and success. Getting entry to university is one battle we're fighting, but also we want success. We don't want kids to go there and be statistics.
Yeah.
I remember in my first year at university, my lecturer said, look the person on your left, one of you will fail. Those narratives are narratives of the past.
Yeah.
We want more kids graduating in record time. You know, so it doesn't help to meet the standard of bachelor's and then you struggle at university. So if your intelligence, it is akin to becoming a boilermaker, then you should encourage you to become a boilermaker.
Well, my lecturer said, a lot of you are going to end up divorcees and drunkards. He was very right. Completely right about me, at least. So then let's talk about something else that, again, I worry about a lot. Or not worry. Maybe I should start with this one. So the kids who then get to write matric in 2025, there's something more special about these kids than we're talking about, right?
100%.
These are the COVID people.
100%.
These are the people who should have written off.
100%.
And their results come out differently.
Yeah. My voice is going up. I'm keep on saying 100% because now you're hitting the nerve.
Yeah.
The talent. You're hitting the nerve because I don't think we celebrate these kids enough for the success they've achieved. Yeah. If we put into perspective, in 2020, there were 9 weeks before there was national lockdown. So 9 weeks.
Only nine.
Nine. It amounts to 45 school days.
Yes.
So those kids had 45 school days. Now, quintile 4, quintile 5 schools and independent schools, the affluent schools, they quickly migrated to an online system, right, where they were taught online. But for kids who are coming from quintile 1, quintile 3 schools, the poor kids, they spend the rest of 2020 doing nothing in the townships and in rural areas, if we're honest. Right,
that's the truth of the matter.
That's the truth of the matter, and since COVID, we're seeing the results are going up. Now, to a layman, you might think there's something that Umalusi and the government are probably doing.
Yeah, I'm going to get to Umalusi. It starts to look like voodoo
to spice up the marks. But I think it speaks a lot about how our curriculum has been articulated. I contend that our curriculum in the key grades, grade 7, 8, and 9, is highly congested and crammed. And so with those years where we did not do much, we did the essential, which was the basic.
Mm.
And that sets a good footing for the kids to thrive in the FET phase. Even last year, the class of 2024, their results were amazing. Those kids were in grade 8 in 2020.
Yeah, which is the transition.
Yes, right? And these kids we're celebrating, they were in grade 7 in 2020. And in 2021, in their grade 8 year, the story was not different. We went to a patrolling system because of social distancing.
Yeah.
They would come in one day and not attend the next day.
In fact, they had to go back to school after a huge fight from many stakeholders.
Correct.
To say, we gotta go back.
Correct.
Go back.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so I contend that, and you must remember, when COVID hit us, there were a lot of scholarly outputs that came here. I call them the alarmists.
Yeah.
Saying that if you don't do something, it's going to be bad. And they were extrapolating from the research that came from Pakistan when they had earthquakes and school had to stop for a protracted period of time. And they were saying that in South Africa, it will be worse than Pakistan. You're talking 10, 20 years a gap, you know, and the kids are thriving. And I don't think that even when they get to university, they perform less than what they did. Otherwise, we'd have squared outputs pointing to that effect. So we need to think about what we are doing in grade 7 and grade 8 and remove the FEF and stay with the core. And take time to make sure that it's cement so that kids can thrive in the FET phase.
In a way, I'm hearing you saying that the hardship of those 1.5 years or so, 2 years, made them stronger.
100%.
I am told, but I've got no research on this and it's not stuff that I do, that it was almost the same that the 1976 cohort that eventually went to study further are the guys who are top leadership in corporate and stuff like that because they went through the toughest of times.
100%. Yeah. 100%, Rams. A colleague of mine reminded me this year when we came from the recess. He reminded me of a quote that was said by T.D. Jakes.
Yeah.
T.D. Jakes says he used to say that he's successful despite of his adversities. And now that he understands better, he says he's successful because of his adversity. So who we are, it is anchored by the challenges we face, and they don't hold us back. In fact, think of an arrow. They are pulling us back and ready to be launched. And so those adversity of 2020, they were similar to an arrow, and we're pulling the arrow back, ready to launch, and now we're launching them to university. And I'm confident that they're going to do amazing things.
I don't know if you follow those things, but if you don't, it's okay. If you do, you can enlighten us. But what do we see in the first year of university for most of these kids when they get to university?
Yeah. Rams, I think there was noise that was made mainly coming from vets, I think, in the years 2018, 2017, where they were talking about the decolonization of education.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it some other day. But I do think that we have not yet fully embraced indigenous methods of educating children. Frankly, the fact that a number of kids that pass matric, they come from quintile 1 to quintile 3 schools, there's something to be understood about how indigenous ways. I mean, when I was in high school, I was taught English in Zulu.
Yes.
Right?
Me too.
And I don't think that my English is less of that of someone who was taught in English.
Yeah, no, right? You're not doing bad, let me say.
I'm not doing bad.
Yeah.
I'm trying, right? but Rems, we must do something about the indigenous ways of educating children. So when these kids are thrust into university, they get a shock of their life, and it's a culture shock. Often than not, many of them go mute for at least 3 months, and they quickly begin to find their voice, if at all.
Yeah.
You know,
and that could be late.
That could be late.
Yeah.
And so there's something that we must do at universities where we work with the kids from where they are instead of expecting that they'll be somewhere. We know the issues we have in our education system. So what makes us to assume that these are polished diamonds that are shining? We must find ways to work with them.
If I were a lecturer, I would say I already have a nightmare with 75 people in my lecture room that I have to teach this particular subject. Now you're forcing me to worry about somebody who doesn't even comprehend the simple language
I'll
that I use.
I'll take water.
Because I can imagine a typical lecturer feels that they already have a huge load on their shoulders, and they can't, nothing more could be added on the load.
I hear you, Remson, and I don't identify, but I accept the position of the teacher, of the lecturer in this case. And what I'm appealing to, I'm not necessarily asking lecturers to adopt a different pedagogical disposition.
Yeah, I'm asking, that's called teaching disposition. Yeah,
yeah. I'm trying to sound intelligent. I'm not appealing that they take a different approach. Rather, I'm asking the whole sector to cleanse itself of things that are not moving us forward.
Mm.
I said in the introduction, I'm questioning the value of going to study engineering at Wits, when you can take a few new courses and do sound engineering. Frankly, there's a number of kids in the township who've called themselves DJ. They're doing outstanding work.
Yeah.
They've never gone to school. Right? And so the point I'm saying is that if we are serious about the future we want to see, we must rid ourselves of what I call the Western mirror and begin to adopt who we are as Africans, as South Africans, and find methods that will prepare us for it as South Africans. And that begins with reducing noise of saying, if you are first year, you will fail.
Well, you have forced me into the next subject I wanted to talk about. That aren't we repeating the same things that we did 20 years before my matric, 36 years after my matric? We're still doing the same thing.
Of course.
That is not defining us differently. That is still taking people through a path that now even is not even proving to make them successes when they get out of here. Example is what I always hear from the agricultural sector, that if we made an effort to teach a lot of stuff that we need to teach about agriculture, we could feed ourselves and not worry about being fed by other nations. But we continue to do stuff that seemingly does not work for us.
Spot on. I agree you 100%. I always say to people, Rams, if I were to take my first year university notes a couple of years ago, almost two decades ago, I'll do well. I'll take the same note and I'll sit in mathematics one and I'll do well.
Yeah.
Because nothing has changed, right? The content might not change, but how we deliver the content should change substantially, right? The examples that we employ to make the content more visible.
Yeah.
Should be different.
Mm.
And unfortunately, we're still even using the same old example, and we expect kids to imagine 1979 when there was this, the machine used to do this. And for me, that's the discourse we need to have as a country. And even internationally, that's a discourse we must have, that with the advent of technology, where half of the arithmetics we teach kids can be done in a few seconds, why are we wasting our time teaching them that the same set of things?
Well, speaking of arithmetic, now there's something called math literacy.
Yes.
I mean, it has caused more controversy than Kaiser Chiefs lately. I mean, people are, there's so many things spoken about math literacy. What is math literacy? Is it a downgrading of proper mathematics? Does it work?
I'm glad that you're using Kaiser Chiefs to talk about these subjects, because when we find time, when we talk about soccer, we'll talk about the controversy in Kaiser Chiefs. But anyway, let's stick to mass
literacy. I'll call you again.
Let's stick to mass literacy for now. I think a lot of people, Rams, think that mass literacy was conceived as a soft landing spot for those who cannot do mathematics. But when the leaders in education first thought of math literacy, they were seeing a gap. That graduates who can manipulate abstract calculus formulas, as you said, they were unable to interpret their payslips. They couldn't negotiate a contract, let alone understand what they're signing to when they take a mortgage. And so there was a blatant and apparent quantitative literacy gap. And math literacy was conceived to close that gap. Right?
Wow.
Quite frankly, I argue that every student, including those that do pure mathematics, must do mathematical literacy. Because on the other end of abstract algebra, you still struggle to even do your text.
Yeah.
Many people are paying exorbitant amount of text because they don't do their financial affairs
because
properly.
X squared plus B squared is equal to, does not really does, solve does my, it, my it text issues.
It
right?
doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. And so for me, that is the issue. So people keep on saying the number of math literacy is high in the mathematics. They're missing the point. The point is that we all need to be quantity savvy. You must understand finances. I mean, you buy a property, right, so where they give you a plan. They say, this is your house. You must be able to visualize it without them using AI to show you. You hear of people saying, oops, I did not think it was going to be this small. But they gave you the figures.
Yeah.
The classical example is the Temu exercise.
Yeah.
They see something on Temu, they buy it, it comes back. It's not what they bought.
Exactly.
Because they couldn't read that it was 30 centimeters and not 2 meters.
Wow.
It was a scaled version of what they bought.
And that person has a distinction in pure mathematics.
And that person is got a master's in mathematics.
Yeah.
And they keep on saying, oh, Temu doesn't work. Right?
Guys, now you know about... I am so educated about math literacy. I promise you, I'm one of those. I mean, I was lost. But is it the norm internationally? Are people, is the world going the same direction? Or has the world been doing this and we've been sleeping on this thing?
The world has been going in that direction, Tadelems. But I mean, without answering the question directly, I'll take a quick slide.
Hey, it's your space. Use it.
I think we are... I think the assumption or the hope or the view or the objective of thinking that every child will be a mathematician, I think is a fallacy, right? We need mathematicians in key areas.
Yeah.
And we don't need, I mean, the pass mark of kids that pass mathematics is sitting at 60-odd% from the 250,000 kids that wrote it. Of the kids that passed, one-third of them passed at 30%. They should have not even taken mathematics.
Yeah,
because at 30%, you won't even get a point at university to pursue any career that demands mathematics. So we must read off the idea that everyone is a mathematician, right? And take kids who've got the acumen for a subject, because we want people that are pinpoint sharp to lead mathematics and science. And it doesn't mean that if you don't take mathematics, you won't be successful. I know a lot of successful people who don't know half the math I know, yet they're doing way better than me.
Yeah.
Right, so we must stop this idea that on the other end of mathematics is success. Success is a completely different discourse that requires its own attention, where we work with kids and people to say, how do you become successful?
We use a metaphor here. You know, a lot of people, especially at this time of the year, right, but generally, they told, oh, man, you know, you got to start jogging because you're not looking good and stuff like that. And I think it's almost the same argument, because I think if we first looked at what we ate before we broke our legs running, we'd be doing very well, right?
Correct.
So I think I get the example. Correct. Now that you've introduced the 30% issue, we still don't understand this thing, right? I mean, to this point, I still read on social media people saying, "Ah, don't tell me about this thing because, you know, we've downgraded education. People have to get a 30% mark and that's enough."
Yeah.
Please educate me. Please educate everybody else. Allay my fears that we're not creating 30%ers out there, even though I think a lot of our MPs are, but that's a different matter altogether.
Yeah, that's, I think there's also misconception out there, right? To qualify for an NSC pass, you must have done 7 subjects. And of the 7 subjects, they are core subjects. 1, home language is a core. 2, you must have an additional subject, additional language.
Yeah.
And thirdly, you must have either maths or mathematical literacy. And 4th, you must have life orientation, which is looked down upon.
And we're going to get there.
Still
answer my question about the fit. We're going to get to...
So those are the core, right? Yeah. And then you've got, you must choose 3 of the 25 electives, right? So to pass, it doesn't mean you get 30% in all of them. You will fail if that's the case. There are different categories.
So that's a difficult 30%.
You'll fail.
In all 7 of them, you fail.
You fail, right?
If you get, if your child gets 30% in all 7 languages, they have failed.
You fail.
So there is no such thing as pass mark. Okay. Good.
So you get different categories. You get your higher certificate pass, you get your diploma pass, and you get your bachelor pass, right? And I'll focus on bachelors, where you need to get at least 50% for your home language, and you need to get 40% in 2 subjects, and you need to get another 50% in 3 subjects.
Okay.
So even that, you can see that it's high.
If you aggregate it, already we know.
Already it's high.
Yeah.
But we must also read off the idea that by getting a bachelor's, we started by saying there are 345 kids that pass and we only have 200 places, right? It doesn't mean that by getting a bachelor's, automatically you have a seat. Mm. Different qualifications require a different point system, right? So if your child wants to become a doctor and they're aiming for 30%, they must start dreaming of becoming a doctor.
Or even 50%, it's not going to work.
Must start dreaming of becoming a doctor.
Yeah.
So we must have a conversation with our children. We cannot apply individual aspirations to the nation. We're driving a system that's of got 100 kids that sit for an exam. So we must find a framework that allows to channel every child to different career paths.
So you introduced then the other matter, life orientation.
Yes.
When I, again, I was in school, we did something, I think that was closest to it, was called social sciences or stuff like that or something. I can't remember what it was called. I did school a long time ago, right? But yeah, it was just to make us understand the world around us more than just education. And you sort of touched on it earlier when you said, you know, we're trying to create more than just an academic, but a full human
Correct.
Being. Is that what LO is about?
Correct, 100%. LO was conceived to close the gaps that academics alone do not close. And the way they, unfortunately, Rams, we must agree that assessment has a washback effect, right? So if you want to see teachers teaching 1+1, put 1+1 in the exam,
yeah,
you'll see. For the whole year, they'll be drilling 1+1,
yeah.
Right? So the way life orientation is assessed is different to how other subjects are assessed, and that sends a wrong message to the system that don't worry about it. You write an essay and you'll pass, right? And I think a lot of skills sit there. Often than not, people would want an English teacher or an English subject to teach academic writing skills. I think they're misplaced. I think in LO, that's when you really learn how to write an essay through an academic lens, not just a collection of opinions and imagines, where you must qualify the statements that you say with in-text references.
You don't just waffle.
You don't just say, I think. Yeah, we appreciate your opinion, but give us facts that you can substantiate with references.
Clearly our MPs did not do LO. But I have issues with LO, and I don't want us to take too long because at some point I need to conclude. I'm a father of people who go through school and have done LO, right? And I've looked at some of the things they do or some of the questions they ask and stuff like that. And I worry about context, right? And I tend to think, who sets this thing up? Who speaks about these things? Because I think the context is not, at the very least, it's not indigenous.
I agree with you.
And bothers me.
I agree with you 100%. And that's a gap we must close, right? So when LO was first conceived, it was not a perfect picture.
Yeah.
We need to constantly critique it, give input so that it can shift, right? At the moment, the context, they are so different to a typical South African child, right? Irrespective of their race, right? I'm talking just South African child. The context is so remote from them. And if we continue to make noise, I think it can shift. What's important to mention, Rams, is that there are two things that people are always confused, right? You get the policy statement, which is the cap we spoke about, then you get textbooks. Textbooks are the author's interpretation of the caps.
But the textbooks are approved by the system.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
They are. But they should not be. I always say to teachers, if you rely a lot in a textbook, you are behind. Because it takes 4 years for a textbook to be published. So if you put a context, right, COVID-19 as a context, and then 2024 it comes out, that's old news.
Yeah.
If you're a teacher, you should quickly take sharp 10 and use your own context and not rely a lot on prescribed texts that are given by government.
I want us to stay with LO, and then we're going to go to the last issue, which is also on the table. You've just brought it up. I look at LO and I ask myself, at which point, and because you speak a lot about the teacher's interpretation, is that not also risky that I would stand there and want to give a certain kind of mentality to a kid that whose reference is Palaboro?
Yeah. Quite frankly, we do it, Rams. I mean, I know you're questioning it, but we are doing it, right? And so I think we must invest a lot in our teachers to, and unfortunately, as human beings, we are biased, right? And so we must note and recognize our biasness so that even when we debate on issues, we can always say, I'm saying this because,
yeah,
remember me, I come from Soweto.
Yes.
Can you show me a different angle to the same phenomenon? And it requires a group of teachers that are open. And I think as a country, we've made good progress in developing a kind of a teacher, but we are not yet there. There's a lot we still need to invest on building the kind of teachers we need that will take South Africa forward.
You've almost messed up with my last, my final conversation, but I still want to get there. Excuse me. So we have reworked our curriculum. We've made it more inclusive. We've made sure that the quality is not only judged on some fluff, but, you know, real stuff that happened. Every day we've created a better cohort of matriculants that are coming out and they're succeeding. We probably should improve more on our TVET and stuff like that. What have we done in creating the teacher that gets them there?
We've done a bit of work, and I say a bit of work because I'm not convinced that we've done enough. I always say to people in mathematics, you know, I'm a maths person.
Yeah.
We talk of variables and constants.
Yeah.
A variable changes, can assume any value. A constant doesn't change. Mm-hmm. Cohorts change. Like we've seen the 2025 cohort.
Yeah.
Now we've got a 2026 cohort. But there's one constant. It's a teacher.
Yeah.
You can change the curriculum all you like. What will deliver the results you want is to work with the teacher. Right? So we move from a system where we had teacher training colleges and we threw everyone through a university that are not transformed. And there's a lot of work we need to do there in terms of developing a teacher that is open, a teacher that doesn't rely a lot on a textbook, a teacher who's a master of his or her craft. And that's what we need.
I mean, somebody once said, and, you know, it's a blight on former President Thabo Mbeki and his Minister of Education, Professor Kada Asmal, may his soul rest in peace. But in doing away with those teacher training colleges, we're not solving anything, because this is what somebody said to me. That,
yeah,
the fact that you did a BA does not mean you don't have to go to a teacher training facility.
Yeah.
Because standing in front of a class, it's got nothing to do with what qualification you have. You need to be taught how to teach.
100%. I think Rams, the old teacher training colleges were heavy on methodology.
Mm-hmm.
They taught teachers how to teach, but they were thin on content.
Yes.
And it calls for a balance of a two.
So it's not either or.
It's not either or.
Yes.
In 1956 or 1968, somewhere there, I can't remember the date, a scholar by Lee Shulman put forward a concept called the pedagogical content knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one domain, you've got your subject matter domain, your knowing how to do mathematics,
yeah,
right? On the other hand, you need to know how to teach mathematics. And the amalgam of the two regions constitute what is known as pedagogical and content knowledge. And I think you are right that universities, they emphasize the content but downplay methodology.
Mm.
Whereas in the past, we were emphasizing methodology and downplayed content. And I think there are other dimensions than the two. I think nowadays, everyone is talking about trauma-informed. I think a teacher must be trauma-aware. We must recognize that there's prevalence of trauma, and you must be able to see it play itself in the classroom. And I'll give you an example, Rams. When we give feedback to children, we say your child has written a test and now we're giving them feedback. Often you associate a mark, or say you got 40%, 20%, 30%. And sometimes we give qualitative feedback, you know, say this essay, whatever, and so on. A feedback can do one or two things. One, it can elicit an emotion, or it can cause you to think.
Mm.
What we want feedback to make children to think. So when you give feedback,
you need them call.
No, yeah. Right?
When you give, that's what they told
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you give feedback,
that's not me.
When you give feedback, you must refrain from saying what you did here. You are, because you are personalizing the comment.
Mm.
Rather say this essay does not reflect. Now it's not about me.
It's about the essay.
It's about the essay.
Yes.
Right? For this essay to be an 80%, it can benefit from. You're not critiquing me. You're critiquing the essay. Right, so I know that I can produce quality.
But you're also already giving me a solution in that critique.
It's
right?
Forward-looking.
Yes.
You're not saying what you did. You must be forward-looking. And for kids who've experienced trauma, they are more sensitized to emotions. They want to protect themselves. Instead of sitting there in front of you and paying attention, they're constantly scanning, where is the next threat coming from? And when they see a threat coming from an exam script that says, you did not study, then you close opportunities for them to learn.
I do not want to derail this, as you can. But on the other hand, aren't we producing sissies, man, that can get tough feedback and have to go fight there to become better?
There's power in knowing yourself, Rams. There's power. I mean, I always say, I'm not sure I should say this here, at home,
yeah,
I'll say, not now. So someone will want, I won't say who, want to get into a fight, we must say, not now. I hear you, but if I were to, I'm not going to argue with you now. Because I can realize that I'm not in a state where I can say things that are coherent. I'll say things or possibly do things that I'll regret later. So there's power in understanding yourself as a human being. It doesn't make you weaker. It makes you stronger because you know when to attack, you know when to not attack.
So, in short, Mshing, and I know it's an exaggeration to say in short, we've been speaking for a while. We should not be looking at matric. We should be looking at the entire schooling system.
Correct.
This last part of the conversation says there's much more than
correct
those results we wait for one day in correct January.
Correct. I mean, as we speak now, I think in the research space, and your listeners who are more qualified can talk about this because they, I mean, but on a different talk, we'll talk about who is a researcher, right? Because I don't think that university professors should be researching education. They should research university, but story for another day, right? They don't know. We are in the trenches. We are the one who should be leading research in schools, right? But anyway, my point I'm trying to make is that we are seeing a lot of success stories of a child who, against odds, walks into VETS first year to study extra science. The odds for the child to succeed were very slim, but they succeed. There is something about how success happens in places where you don't imagine, that we don't understand. When you look at the research we have, we know what is not working, what is broken, right? But I'm not sure we know how to fix it. So we must study success to begin to say, how can you replicate this success?
Finally, is the future better than what a lot of us suspect is now?
Certainly. And if you look at 1993 and where we are, I think we made huge strides and we made a lot of progress. If you look at the representation in key fields, it's not where we want it to be, but comparatively to 1993, I think it's there.
Thank you very much, Mjengu. It's been wonderful chatting to you. You've educated me, I mean literally and figuratively, about what to understand about this issue. All the best.
Thank you very much, Tatel MCA. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and you always make me think while I'm talking to you.
Well, there you have it, right? You get to understand the things that we were not thinking about, and we have to know that this is not a 90-minute game. In fact, it's not even a 12-year game. It's a much more longer life game than we think about it. And stop calling those children the dumb cop. You dumb cop. So, please, I beg you, again, subscribe. The bottom button right here. Just subscribe. Just click on it. It costs you absolutely nothing. It doesn't even cost more data or electricity when you have it. Thank you very much for watching this episode. From me, Rams Mabote, goodbye and God bless.